Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
So some may say that the Will Smith controversy has been done to death. I say not.
What do you say? David Hepworth has barely started.
Every morning I wake up and think, and another thing. And, you know, my first thought when I saw this was publicity stunt, you know.
Surely I thought that too.
It's been done to restore the flagging fortunes of the Oscars, which for years now have been fewer and fewer people have been bothered about them at all. And also, at the same time as them being less and less popular, they've been nominating less and less popular films. You know what I mean? So the films that they're nominating and arguing about, nobody's seen, and in many cases,
which is intentionally goes to the whole diversity thing, isn't it?
I saw some extraordinary survey that the what do you call it? Power of the Dog film. Benedict Cumberbatch movie. And I saw some survey that said that only 6% of the available audience has seen this, you know, because it's on Netflix. Anybody can see it.
Yeah.
But they just hadn't bothered. Anyway.
Good film, though. Yeah.
Okay, well, yeah.
But as you say, it's a different, it's less mainstream, isn't it? Which means that it's going to be a less, which is a good thing in many ways, but it means it's probably reducing the chances of a big audience.
It's the classic case of, you know, what's his name? Ian, who was the manager of Spinal Tap. We're not getting less popular. It's just our appeal is becoming more selective.
Yeah.
And that's the Oscars. Anyway, we go to the subject of Will Smith. Which my daughters, you know, I was saying, publicity stunt, whatever. My daughters go, no, it's real or whatever. So I watched it. And my question to my daughters, which I'll put to you, Mark Ellen, because I know you know a lot about the world of the scrap. You're very
I'm a grappler. I'm a scrapper.
You and Alex
never heard of them.
You and Alex Gold, they really come home on a Saturday night without a kind of bloodied nose or you've been in some kind of dust
up. Police incident tape tied around it. That's right.
Usually about which is the best album by Pete Brown, his battered ornaments or whatever. You know, anyway, you've been in many of scrap. I'm saying to you, I'm putting to you the question I put to my daughters, which was, have you ever, in all your puff, seen one man slap another? Slap another.
No, I don't mean you.
Isn't it? The slap is the key point because I'm going to just hear me out, Sam.
Yeah, okay?
Because the slap is the kind of the contemporary descendant of the glove across the face of the kind of 19th century challenge to a duel, isn't it? A slap.
Well, it's provocative.
It's provocative. It's an insult.
If somebody punches you, you're immediately on the defensive. I've got to stop them punching me again. But if somebody slaps you, I think the urge is to slap them back, isn't it?
Well, I don't know.
Isn't that right?
I've never been slapped, and I've never slapped anybody. Have you?
No, I haven't.
Okay, fine. So our experience of this is entirely based on loads and loads of movies and watching Will Smith the other night, you know, which is kind of like a movie anyway. Yeah. And I've been thinking about this. I've been gaming this in my mind, you know. If if I were to slap anybody, any bloke, what's my fear? My fear is that they're going to retaliate, and I don't think they are going to slap me. They're going to hit me. Yeah. So if I go to do that in a public arena, I'm going to do that on international television, even in front of the reduced audience of the Oscars.
Yep. Yep.
The chances are, I know Chris Rock is not a huge bloke and Will Smith is quite a big bloke. The chances are that he will retaliate by thumping me and then I'll end up with a broken nose. It seems that it's the most provocative thing you can possibly do. And to then, having done this, to turn on your heel, return to your seat, not to grasp the hold of your good lady insulted wife and say, we're leaving here, no, we're getting out.
The volleys on
get
stage.
Get your coat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Instead, to sit down seems to me the most gross example of what is called, in other quarters, entitled behavior that I've ever seen. It's like, I'm a movie star, I can do this. Yeah? Yeah. Yeah. I've got a special chair. They've given me this privileged position at this very privileged ceremony, and I'm just going to resume my seat and act as if nothing happened, apart from shouting a few insults. It's just, it's kind of mad film star behavior moved up to another gear, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's completely another level. And I do not believe... I'm sure all these guys, you know, they're provocative comedians and so forth. They all understand that. It's a well-established trade. But I do not believe that Chris Rock made that comment thinking at all about Will Smith's wife's alopecia. I honestly think it was a mile away from his thoughts, because he would have been crazy to do that. And I don't think he's crazy. Do you?
Well over to you. Okay. No, because I've only got two or three points to make. And one of them is, I think it looked like he knew he had said something that was contentious. Because when Will Smith came on stage, he was kind of like, it was almost as if he vaguely expected it. He wasn't surprised that he was upset. So therefore, he must have thought it was it was on thin ice with the gag in the first place. Because otherwise, was that on the auto cue? You know, nobody check that speech? Was that a spontaneous joke? I doubt it. Because if they had, they would have said to him, I wouldn't say that. So I suspect he probably did know that was the case. But my feeling is, why didn't she... Could she not have? I know it was a very harsh thing to make a gag about, but in the rock and roll rough and tumble and the hurly burly, Dave, of an Oscars roast, and that is the tradition now, isn't it?
And that's what it is.
If you've seen Ricky Gervais in years past him, which I have,
well, that's Golden Globes, isn't it? That's different.
Oh, it's Golden Globes.
Anyway, but go on. Yeah.
But anyway, it's still, I mean, an unbelievably vicious environment, isn't it? You sit there and you say really, really contentious things about the people to see if they can take it. Now, what she could have done is risen above it. She could have done this kind of shrug as if to say, well, that's a bit harsh because actually I've got alopecia and I'm, you know, it's a medical condition. But hey, you know, if you want to have a go, have a go. And being kind of good natured and shrugging about it. Now, if she'd done that, she would have got fantastic press, I think. The next day, people would have said, my God, what a sweethearted woman. What a good natured woman for dealing with that gag and not complaining about it. Because when what actually happened is if you saw it, is that his reaction was to the joke was that he laughed. He thought it was very funny.
Yeah,
he then turned to look at her, and she was looking absolute daggers. And that's my other point, is that he wasn't defending himself.
That's so married life, that is.
You know? I know. So he knew that everyone...
One looks at one good lady wife to find out if something is funny or not.
To find out whether it's okay. I know.
We all do that. We all do that. The true decisive
back in
factor.
The chair. I know. In which case, and therefore, you know, I'm not trying to defend him at all because I thought it was fundamentally the wrong thing to do. But he was defending her.
It wasn't
a joke about him. It wasn't a joke about him that he couldn't take. He was defending. And if somebody says something publicly, a kind of mean and unpleasant about your wife, you probably would have an immediate reflex gut reaction, wouldn't you?
Okay, and I'll tell you what it would.
Very, very extreme. I know it should never.
And,
have
done, I know. I entirely accept what you say, Mark. And, you know, it is possible to imagine ourselves in a situation where one's wife or one's family or whatever is somehow, you know, insulted or whatever. Can you imagine any fracas ensuing that doesn't immediately result in you leaving?
I know. Well, that's the other thing they could have done, is got up and left then.
But they won't do that because it's the bloody Oscars.
Well, also because he knew he was going to get an Oscar himself.
You go.
20 minutes later.
Oh, how insulted was he?
No, exactly.
Not very.
Not as insulted that he couldn't receive an Oscar exactly 20 minutes later. I mean, I have to say, I did feel awfully sorry for all the other people who were involved because, you know, Kenneth Branagh. I mean, Kenneth Branagh has been nominated 7 times, hasn't he? This is the first time he's ever won. And there he was, clutching his Oscar to his bosom.
Who cares?
I've never seen anybody more pleased to win an Oscar. And good luck to him. He's fantastic. He deserves it, yeah. But does anybody know anything about this? Are we talking about the people who won? No. It hoovered up all the publicity. Absolutely unbelievable.
So last night I went to the Radio Times. Radio Times have a do every year, but it hasn't happened for the last couple of years because of COVID, where they give out covers, kind of souvenir versions of their covers, to loads of the people who've been on their covers. It's very nice little do. You know,
yeah.
It's very, quite swish, takes place at Claridge's, and they have a celebrity presenter. And
I've been before,
room
yeah.
full of stars and so forth. Anyway, the celebrity presenter last night was Lenny Henry. And Lenny Henry gets up. He's very good. The first thing he says was, "Come up before I go any further. Is Will Smith in the room?" So you thought to yourself, every presenter in the world this week is getting up and saying some variation on that, aren't they? You know,
but there's all these comedians have been tweeting about how they're all going to the gym in preparation for the Olivier Awards because they want to make sure they're ready to defend themselves.
Well, you will see, as a consequence of this, an increase in the number of people going on stage and thumping comedians. You just will.
Do you think you will?
Yeah, undoubtedly, because he got away with it. You know, it will just happen. I'm not seeking to encourage it in any way. I think it was absolutely reprehensible, but it will happen.
God, well, we're in a bit of a pickle here if we're already thinking that comedy is dead, that nobody dares say anything. If they don't dare say anything because they might get thumped publicly, then there's even more of a deterrent, isn't it?
Anyway, let's go to less controversial
waters.
I
thought there was one very funny comment about Hadley Freeman of the Guardian. Hadley Freeman's British. She tweeted a thing, said, having slept on it, this is my hot take on the Oscars. Men are just too emotional. It's really, really funny. So you can imagine the response to that.
Oh, God. Well, as we've established, he wasn't emotional at all because he stayed.
Yeah, had
he
exactly.
been emotional, he would have left. So, yeah.
So did you meet somebody who had a big collection of records? What were you telling me this morning?
Well, I met a guy at the... it was a very nice evening. That was there for an hour and a half or whatever. And I was standing around and I was talking to a guy who's very senior in BBC Sport, you know, in charge of the Olympic, their coverage of the Olympics and Wimbledon and so forth. And we talked about music. And he was telling me that he'd always been obsessed with Big Country. He'd always loved Big Country. He said, I've got all their records. I said, so go on. How many Big Country records have you got? Have you got 10? He said, oh, yeah, I've got 10. I said, have you got 15? He said, oh, yeah, I've got 15. Have you got 20?
So at this point, you're thinking, these must be bootlegs. I mean, they can't know how many records.
Hold on. I said, you haven't got 25, have you? He said, yeah, I think I've got 25. I've got 25 Big Country albums. I said, so how does that work? He says, well, I think they made 8 when they were kind of together. Yeah. And then they made another one after Stuart Adams died and they kind of reformed with a different singer, I think, and so forth. And then there have been albums of outtakes and then there have been no doubt loads and loads of live albums and so forth. So there are now, he says, and I've no reason to think he's wrong. He says there are 25 Big Country albums.
And he's got
which really made me think.
Yeah.
Because there must be loads of people who have ridiculous numbers of records by people who are, how can I put this, less than canonical artists. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, having a load of Bob Dylan records or a load of Beatles records is kind of par for the course, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
But and I'm just thinking, I've got a ridiculous amount of Fairport Convention records. I'm just looking over here, you know, how many of the records I've got of certain artists, you know. But even then, I don't have 25 Fairport Convention records, although I might do if I go and look at the CDs as well, you know. But there are probably loads and loads of cases, you know. I don't know if other people have got 25 Budgie albums. They probably are, aren't they?
You talk about illegal stuff as well, aren't you? Because I mean, collection is, I think we've got something in the region of 60 Beatles albums. I mean, just absolute rubbish, you know, press conferences, studio outtakes, you know, just awful, awful live recordings done by a kind of reel to reel recorder under a chair somewhere in Miami, you know. And Dylan, I would say we've got probably 70 Dylan albums. I mean, it's absurd. We got bootlegs from sound checks in Melbourne in 1966. I mean, the trouble is that none of this stuff's really worth it. The Beatles stuff isn't worth anything because nothing was any good came out in anthology.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yeah.
All that money you spent is now, the whole thing is completely devalued. But no, I mean, we've got tons of those. God, what things you collect? I'm afraid to say I've collected all the Incredible String Band, of course.
I mean, Incredible String Band?
Right? Yeah, all of them. I've got Earth Band, No Ruinous Feud. I've got the hard Rope and Silken Twine. No Ruinous Feud. What an ironic title for an album that was, because they were all.
I've got
their solo albums as well. I got Liquid Acrobat as regards the air.
Yeah,
it's a great title, isn't it? Now, I'm afraid I've got all of them, which is absolutely fine. I've got a Robin Williamson solo album. I've got his Myrrh album. I've got stuff that must have sold about 4 copies. I don't know why I never really played a lot of them.
I've got two Michael Herron albums here somewhere.
Oh, right. Smiling Men with Bad Reputation.
And I can't remember what the name of the other one is.
That's a good record.
And
it's got Keith Moon on it, I think.
Yeah. And now the funny thing is, you know, Incredible String Band, classic case, loads and loads of albums. How many good ones? Three.
You're being kind. And they're very patchy, aren't they?
Yeah, but the three are great.
I mean, some of them are just fundamentally no good at all because they just haven't got the right lineup. You know, there's just no good song.
No.
So it all went really, really sour and downhill very, very fast.
Yeah. So if you can do better than 25 big country albums, I don't mean that you got 26 big country albums, but I'm really interested in people who've got, I don't know, 25 Thea Gilmore albums or, you know, 25 Leon Russell records. I think that's really interesting to show such dedication to people who are kind of less than stellar. I think is a remarkable thing, and we want to hear about it.
The Word Podcast, prime cuts of popular culture served fresh each week.
Here's a funny thing. Have you ever seen this before?
I've seen Ben Sidran in concert. Have fun.
Have you really?
Yeah,
Ben Sidran. I love Ben Sidran.
Farnham Maltings, I think it was. Fantastic. Yeah, he was really, really good.
Ben Sidran, probably best known as a member of the Steve Miller Band, wasn't he? And so forth. He's kind of mate of those. And he made these really good albums on Blue Thumb. Blue Thumb, one of my favorite labels in the 70s, kind of jazzy pop. But these were the days. I just want you to travel back with me, Mark. To the days when you could put an album out of kind of marginal jazzy pop and say, I'll tell you what's going to be on the cover. My foot, bare foot sticking out of the window of a car. And that will be on
pressed against the glass. Suggesting what? That some kind of hanky-panky is going on in the back seat? I have no idea.
I have absolutely no idea at all.
But he would have said that, and somebody, the art department, would have signed it off, wouldn't they?
Absolutely no trouble at
all. No problem. It's fine, Ben, whatever you want.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, so look, here's a curious thing,
I think. Roxy Music's original lineup about to go on tour of America. I saw this tweeted by Brian Eno to make it absolutely clear that, that Brian Eno's not part of it. But I do think it's pretty amazing that that lineup that made the Roxy Music album 50 years ago in 1972, Brian Ferry, Andy McKay, Phil Manzanera, Paul Thompson, all still going. Graham Simpson, the bass player, is no longer with us, and Brian is not signing up. But I still think that's pretty amazing, actually, that four members of an original band are still together and still touring. Don't you think that's incredible? Because I can't think of a band with more members than that now. I can't. Kiss still going, but there's only about two of them, I think.
There's three members of Kiss, surely.
Three members. Are there three of the original?
Oh, God, I'm maybe wrong about that.
I think there's only two. I don't know. ZZ Top, sadly, there's only two of them now. You know, Aerosmith, no, there's only a couple of them. Fleetwood Mac, that lineup didn't really get to go until 77. You too are now coming into contention. I mean, that's amazing that the four of them.
Actually, Aerosmith, while you talk about Aerosmith, I think there's more than two of them still with us. In fact, they definitely
but
are.
But certainly not four, I don't think.
Well, except it's interesting, the drummer, whose name has just slipped my mind. I think it Kramer, is the ending Kramer? I think it does. He has kind of taken, they're about to resume their kind of Las Vegas
Joey
residency.
Kramer?
That's right. That was cut short, obviously, because of COVID. Massive money spinning, kind of 25 nights in Las Vegas, you know, all you can eat buffet. He's not going to be there for that because he's taking leave of absence. And it's one of these, I just need to go off and get my head together or whatever. But he hasn't left. So this is a guy who's like 71 years old. You know what I mean? And I just decided, no, I'm not going to come on that tour. But I'm not handing my notice in. Please note, I'm not giving up. You know,
so I could come and join the one after next.
Absolutely.
And you're going to need me. You're going to be glad.
Which is an extraordinary state of affairs, it seems to me. Well, so, Roger,
everyone's looking for every combination, aren't they? It's like with Mick Taylor, the Stones with Mick Taylor. I mean, it never crossed my mind that they'd call Mick Taylor back in again, but why not?
I suppose.
We're still there. You know, and suddenly the Mick Taylor lineup was, well, obviously Bill wasn't there, but that's pretty amazing, really.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Rolling Stones is not right without Bill Wyman, it seems to me.
No, not right, no.
Yeah, well, I know Charlene Watts. That's a different story, but...
But there's going to be, I mean, Metallica and Red Hot Chili Peppers and Def Leppard and all those guys. Those guys fairly soon are going to look like they've done nearly 50 years. No, was it? Nearly 40-something, isn't it? It will be 40-something. But I still think that's pretty amazing. Four members of Roxy, still there, still with us.
Talking of 40 years ago, look at that.
Oh, my God, Jackson. Well, that is a genuine... Sorry, I've got to show you. This is a complete coincidence. That's what I dug out this morning. Was
you got Joe Jackson look sharp.
Yeah, yeah. For some reason, I was thinking about this record and I've sat down and listened to it and it's fantastic, Look Sharp by Joe Jackson.
Really? I haven't heard that for years.
It's really good. Do you remember Fools in Love, Sunday Papers? Yeah. Is she really going out with him?
Yeah.
It's a really good record.
So that was the first one, wasn't it?
That was the first one. It's caused a lot of excitement. A huge amount of excitement. And I interviewed him very, very early on. And he almost immediately made it clear that he hated the press, which I thought was pretty astonishing. Charlie Murray wrote this beautiful piece about him in the NME. I can still remember it vividly, saying, you absolutely have to listen to this guy. I mean, he got amazing press, but he was just sort of very, very contemptuous of all journalists. By the fact that they completely launched his career.
Yes.
Anyway, very funny, very curmudgeonly fellow, actually.
Yeah, extremely curmudgeonly fellow. Well, he was really in talented. Kind of interviews and so forth. But yeah, very talented.
So what were you going to say about 92?
No, I was going to say the record that I...
82?
82, that's my point. It's 40 years old this year. Wow. Joe Jackson's Night and Day, which is an extraordinary thing.
Well, Look Sharp would be whatever that would be.
And well, there'll be more, 42, I'll see. 42,
43.
But I do think that one of the things that makes the difference with this record is the cover. It's just beautiful.
Amazing, isn't it?
Which is based on was it Al Hirschfeld, the the New Yorker illustrator used to do all these fabulous line drawings back in the back in the 40s. So it very self-consciously conjures up, doesn't it? The kind of the New York of the New Yorker and George Gershwin and Cole Porter and so forth. But it's a fantastic record. It's a really, really good record still to this day. But my goodness, 40 years old. Talking of dates, June the 18th of this year, we are once more back in Holland Park in London, presenting the second in our award-winning series of Word in Your Park.
We present ourselves with awards, and we always win them. Yeah.
We do. Where this, on this occasion, is because the 18th is also the 80th birthday of James Paul McCartney, we should be celebrating that in our own particular way with special guests to come along and talk about Paul McCartney, celebrate Paul McCartney in a variety of different ways. We're going to have a ukulele slam, are we calling it, Mark?
Yeah, we are. It's going to be a ukulele sound clash.
Sound clash. Yeah,
people playing classic McCartney tunes
on the ukulele.
Which he would approve of, as he used to play it himself.
And so there's all manner of fun games and stimulating encounters. And that's taking place on the 18th of June.
In the afternoon.
Yeah. In the afternoon. In the Holland Park. If you went last year, you'll know it's a fantastic venue, because we're very happy to be friends with Opera Holland Park, who every year build this covered auditorium out just outside Holland House in Holland Park, where they put on their productions. And so we've got it for the Saturday afternoon. There'll be licensed bars. There will be guaranteed sunshine.
It was gorgeous last year, wasn't it? The sky was absolutely fantastic.
And it's going to be even better than... It's going to be even better this year. And so, you know, make sure if you haven't done so already that you order your tickets via the link below.
And have we got some new patrons? I think we have, haven't we?
Alex will have to join us now. Can he do that? Oh, Alexander Geld is...
His microphone being unmuted, and here he is.
All right, okay. Who have you got, Alex?
As if by magic. Here I am.
There you are, right.
Okay, I can tell you right now, new patrons we have this week are Michael Cronshaw.
Very good.
Hello, Michael. Cronshaw. Nice to have you aboard.
Splendid to have you.
The mysterious Greg.
Just Greg.
Just Greg.
How many G's in Greg?
That's terse, Greg.
Is it Greg with three G's? Top and tail. A 3G Greg.
Who's your favourite Gregs in rock, Mark?
Gregs. Well, who are there? There's
Allman.
There's a Gregory in The Heaven 17, isn't there? Glenn Gregory. That's his surname.
Glenn Gregory.
Greg Allman.
Greg Allman. Greg Ridley of Humble Pie. I've gone blank. Can't think of any other Gregs. There's got to be loads. Surely.
Greg Gilbert of The Delays.
Oh, there you go. We got four.
That's
we are chorus. Carry on. Go on.
Chris Bergson.
Hello, Chris.
Welcome aboard, Chris.
Pull up a chair.
I know how it's pronounced. It's Ayala or Ayala.
Ayala.
Is there any other name?
A-Y-A-L-A.
That's the only name we've been given.
Ayala. What a great name.
Okay. Famous footballer called Ayala. Go on.
Also, we have Frank McFarlane.
Hello, Frank. Very nice to have you.
Frank's in rock. Come on. Frank's in rock. Frank Zappa, obviously.
Frank Black.
Frank Black. There's a Frank in the Searchers, wasn't there? Frank Allen in the Searchers. That's through. We are quorate. Carry on. Okay.
Now, these are annual patrons. If you subscribe annually, you get 15% off.
There you go.
First of which is Kirsty McLean Steele.
Hello, Kirsty.
Hello, Kirsty. That's great.
Kirsty's in rock.
You also get your birthday, special birthday number, which if people don't know
about...
Well, that's only if you subscribe
to the birthday tier.
That's the birthday tier.
Top tier subscription. Okay. Yeah.
Top tier.
All right.
Well, it's a mighty, mighty gift. Next up is Peter Carlton.
Peter Carlton. Hello, Peter. On board.
Russell Tarr.
Russell Tarr.
Russell Tarr.
Yeah.
Who was the Russell Wooden Penguin in the band at Smash Hits? He used to spell Russell. Oh, there was a new romantic musician called Russell.
Really?
Russell Bell. Do you remember? He was always known as Russell Bell because he spelled his name with two R's. Two R's, two S's, and two L's. Russell Bell.
Very good.
Yeah.
Wooden Penguin.
Wooden Penguin.
Very nice to we welcome all the Penguin family. From Mr. Penguins.
Penguins and Rock.
Well, it's a Fleetwood Mac theme there, isn't it?
Fleetwood Mac and an album called Penguins.
Penguins hidden in the artwork of several Fleetwood Mac covers. I think
they're Yeah, they were their official symbol, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the band Creature, isn't it, Penguin?
Yeah, it was. Absolutely.
There's the Penguin Cafe Orchestra, if we count them as rock. Have we got a third?
Didn't the Nanook, the Frank Zappa character, didn't he encounter a penguin at some stage? I think he might have done.
Oh, okay. Let's say so.
Across the tundra mile after mile. Yeah. I don't know.
And finally, we have Mark Thomas and Martin Simmons.
Very good. Mark and Martin. Well, Simmons and Mark welcome on board, both
Great
of you.
Have you.
Welcome to the fun and games, which will be resuming next Friday. Ooh. After a break for our normal Friday night quiz, and if you haven't already taken part, make sure you do so, which takes place via Zoom, where we every week, for those people who haven't done it, we present 10 visual clues to the identity of a musical act. And you simply have to guess.
And how many have we done of these
cryptic
now?
Clues?
We must have done
hundreds.
What, 60, yeah, 70, 80? We've been doing it over 2 years. I think we have. It's absolutely astonishing.
Oh, definitely over hundreds.
We'd love people to suggest possible subjects, but obviously they can't suggest possible subjects. They know the answer. They've been a wide diversity of wide range, and they're very, very entertaining.
Yeah, so if you haven't already taken part, make sure you do so in the very near future.
This podcast was brought to you by The Word.